Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2012. Lecture 18, delivered on October 29, 2012. The title of this lecture is Capital Budgeting Decision Making.
Today, capital budgeting decision making. It's finally come. The zombie apocalypse. You can buy some armor, and that'll allow you to get across the block and collect cans of Spam so that you'll have something to eat. Okay, now, each of those cans of Spam is going to get you $5. So you're going to gain $5 with each of those cans of Spam. That armor costs you $20. How many cans of Spam are you going to have to get to make it worth your while to buy that armor? Probably four cans of Spam at $5 each. I don't know what the hell that example was about, but here it is. When we start a project, we are going to put down money. That's called the capital expenditure on the project. For a small operation, your capital expenditures could be small. For a big operation, they could be just insanely large. Realistically, capital expenditures go through time. You're not going to put all the money in at once, but you're certainly going to put it in stages. And like I said, those capital expenditures could be on a small level. For example, in a company like mine, my initial capital expenditures were around $10,000. In a company the size of something like, for example, a Caterpillar, a capital expenditure to start a new project could be $150 million. But one way or the other, the whole idea of making that expenditure is so that you can actually earn money off it. You can get cash flow from it. You're not going to spend the money for nothing. You're going to hope, for God's sake, that you're going to get something out of it. So, for example, I put $400 into a project right now. That's on the timeline at zero. That's money out of my pocket. And then that project is going to start generating cash flow in. And so what we want to know is, okay, how long is the project and what is going to be the flow of cash? We usually break it down so that it's happening at year end. That just simplifies the analysis somewhat. So let's say that as we go on in this project, we're going to have year one and we're going to have year two. And in year one, the project will generate for us $150. And then it's going to generate in the second year $300, and that'll be the end of the project. And then there's a salvage value at the end of the second year that we can get back 50 bucks in salvage on the equipment. It's a two-year project. Cost us $400 to start it, and then it will pop $150 in the first year and then $300 in the second year, close the project down, sell off the equipment for $50 salvage, and that's the end of it. We go on with something new. Is this project worth it? Now, one thing that you would say is, it looks like $450, $500. Yeah, it's definitely worth it. No question about it. And then you say, then someone would say, no, wait a minute. You're not taking into account the time value of money. $150 a year from now isn't $150 now. It's something less than that in its present value. And 2 years out, $350 is definitely not worth that now. We have to turn this cash flow into now money to compare to that little mother, or that thing up there. Okay? So, this brings us to the net present value. Net present value, NPV. It's one of those holy grails of finance. It's done all the time. What's the NPV of a project? Okay, well, we're going to have negative $400 plus the present value 1 year out of $150. Well, we're going to have to stop here for a minute and say to ourselves, okay, we need a discount rate. So we're going to have to find, you can use CAPM or you can do something else, but we need a discount rate for future cash flows. And we're going to say for this one, just for the sake of argument, 6.5% will be our discount rate. So we're going to telescope that $150 back 1 year to find out its value now, plus we're going to bring back the $300 and the $50 together, and we're going to have to discount that back 2 years. Now, let me do that real quick here. $400, and I'm going to work this out here. 150, 350. My ass, what did I do wrong here? Oh, apps, finance, 7. Do this real quick here, 6.5, -400, and if you want to follow along with me, make sure you can get that number that I'm getting here, $350, I come up with $49.53 is the NPV. Is that what you get if you do it? Okay. So should we take the project or not? The answer is yes. If NPV is positive, you accept the project. If NPV is negative, you reject the project. It's just one or the other. Doesn't matter how big NPV is positive or how big it is negative, the cutting point is zero. Above zero, accept the project. And that's how we say it. We accept this project. If the NPV is below zero, you say we reject this project. And then you move on. It doesn't matter if it's just a little tiny bit negative. Once you've set this, you don't play around with it. You just say that's the end of it. Well, that's not too bad. I mean, it's something easy to do. Well, what happens if we have one like this? Let's say we have a capital project where we're going to put out $1,200 on the timeline right now. A project costing $1,200 will pay $200 for the first 4 years. $300 in year 5 and $100 in year 6 when it closes, when it shuts down, with a salvage value. $50. Do we accept or reject the project? And we'll use a discount rate at, let's do 7.2%.
Is that $200 per year for the first four?
Yeah, $200 per year. Sorry about that. I'm just not paying attention to what I'm writing there. There, yes, $200 per year for the first 4 years, and then it will pull $300 in year five, spiking up, and then dying out in year six at $100, and then we'll sell off the equipment for $50. If I don't mention a salvage value, then there is no salvage value. Usually there's something, at least on the books, you can finish it off. Okay, here we go. So, drawing this as a timeline, with years 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, we'll have our cash inflows. Our cash outflow here at 0 is $1,200. And then we're going to have this stream, an annuity, kind of a jumpy annuity, of 200. 200, 200, 200, spiking up to 300, wait, is that right? 300, yeah, 300, and then dying out at $150 for a total on year six of $150 in cash flow. And we need to know the net present value of this project. So what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to do this kind of net present value formula, except we're going to be beating down 1 year's cash flow, year two cash flow, year three, discounting each of them back to the present. Now, wouldn't it be nice if there were a way to do this without all that work? Well, if you're an accountant, no, I live for this. No. No one wants to do this, and in fact, there's a way that you don't have to do this if you have a calculator. So you're going to whip out your calculator, and you're going to learn how to do this so that you don't take miles on an exam. Are we excited? You should be. Okay, turn on your calculator. Turn on your calculator here. And what you do from there, you're going to hit Apps Finance. Apps Finance. And then go down, number 7 is NPV. Either go down and hit, and go down to 7 and hit enter, or just key in 7, and you'll come back to the main screen, and there will be an NPV. That stands for net present value. Okay, you ready to go? Okay. The first thing with the NPV you do is you key in the cash outflow, -1200. Make sure you use the negative sign, not the minus. Okay, now give it that comma button. Comma. Oh, I lied to you. Don't put in -1200. Put in 7.2. Duh. Sorry about that. 7.2 comma -1200. Now hit comma, and before you go on, you hit second and hit brace. That's above the parenthesis. So second parenthesis, which opens a brace. In the braces, you will put the positive cash flow. 200, comma, 200, comma, 200, comma, 200, comma, 300, comma, 150. Then you close the brace and close the parenthesis. What do you get for an answer?
Error.
Error my ass.
I got negative 214.
Yeah, 214. Negative 214, 86. Again, Apps Finance 7 brings you back to the main screen with NPV facility open. 7.2, comma. It's right beside the parenthesis. Yes, and even if you look around there, there's even an exclamation point if you're really excited about the exercise. Yeah, the comma is right there. So it's NPV, open parenthesis, and that's done there for you. 7.2, comma, negative 1200, comma. Then you open brace, that's second parenthesis, second left parenthesis, and you go 200, comma, 200, comma, 200, comma, 200. Comma, 300. Excuse me. No, seriously, noobs. That hurt. Yeah, those of you who were in my office, you saw me snarfing down some noms. And okay. Comma, 150. Comma 150, open, close the brace, close the parenthesis, and then you hit enter, and you should get negative $214.86. Which means, what do you do with this project? Reject it. It's, in other words, the present value of the future cash inflows isn't sufficient to overcome the initial cost of the project. It's over. You don't do it. That's how you do a net present value the fast way. The only problem, of course, you have to watch out for is keying in something incorrectly, accidentally putting in a number wrong, and coming out with the wrong answer that way. But it's a lot easier than doing it with the old-fashioned way, banging out the present value of each component of the cash flow, overall cash flow. It's a lot easier this way. And that's net present value in a nutshell. This is more or less how projects are decided in the real world. Marketing comes up with one of its great ideas, takes it to the finance people. We get projections of the cost. We get estimate of the cost. We get projections of how it's going to play out with future expected cash flow. And we say up or down based upon this analysis. And to this day, this is how it's done. Now, the book starts out with a couple of old school techniques that no one uses anymore. And if I ever see you using them, like the payback method, I will give you a wedgie. Don't use those. You have to use NPV, or there's another version of it, which is actually kind of cool and useful, used, but you got to be careful with it. But for right now, what I want you to do, well, let me draw something here real quick. Okay. Look, with this project right here, what I did right here, I found out if I were to graph net present value on a vertical axis, and I was going to do discount rate on the horizontal axis. So I was going to do discount rate of 1%, 2%, 3%. 4%, 5%, 6%, 7%, 8%, 9%, 10%. Now, and on this axis, let me do 51, 152, 253, and then down below, negative 50, on down, 1, 152, 253, like that. Okay, when I use the discount rate of 7.2%, just a little hair above 7%, I came up with a net present value that was what? -$214. Okay, -$214, almost -$215. Okay, so at 7.2%, little bit. Right about there. A discount rate of 7.2% bought me a net present value that was 152, a little bit lower than that. Let me put it right there. And this is a really rough graph. There's a point I'm making. Okay. You got a substantially negative net present value. Now, I want you to go back. Let's try a discount rate. Somewhere, let's do 5% on that same cash flow. Just do 5%. Apps, finance, 7 for the NPV facility. And we'll do 5%, 5, comma, negative 1,200, comma, open the braces so we can put in the positive cash flow. 200, comma, 200, comma, 200, comma, 200, comma, 300, comma, 150. Close the parenthesis, close the brace, close parenthesis, go. 143.82. So at 5%, we get 143.82. A little bit, the NPV isn't as negative. Humor me on something. Do it one more time. Let's take a ridiculously low discount rate, say 1.5%, and just do it one more time. Apps, finance, 7 for NPV, and then we'll do 1.5%, comma, negative $1,200, comma, and by the way, the other part of why I do it this way is so that you just do it a couple of times until you're used to doing it, comma, and then we'll do the 200, comma, 200, comma, 200, comma, 200, comma, 300, comma, 150, close the braces, close the parenthesis. It's negative $13. At 1.5%, it's just barely negative. So in other words, if I were to look at this NPV line, as the discount rate goes down, the NPV goes up simply because the discount rate is not dropping the cash flows as hard. Now, if I were to project this, I would say it's probably somewhere on a little above 1% where this net present value would have been positive. You don't have to do this if you don't want to, but I'm going to run 1% just to say, okay, what would have happened? Apps, finance, 7, with 1%, comma, negative 1,200, comma, open the brace, 200, comma, 200, comma, 200, comma, 200, comma, 300, comma, 150, slow it, finish it up, $7.14. Well, I'll be darned. Somewhere between 1.5 and 1%, the NPV became a positive number. That will always happen. Somewhere along the way, some discount rate will cause the NPV to be exactly on the knife edge of accept-reject. That place where that happens, in this case, it's kind of a ridiculous thing. I'm thinking it's probably around 1.2%, something like that. See that place where NPV crosses from positive to negative or negative to positive? That's called the internal rate of return. The internal rate of return is the discount rate that makes the net present value zero. The internal rate of return is the discount rate that makes the net present value zero. So if I were to, let's say, on the second exam for an essay question, explain what internal rate of return is, what would you say to me? You didn't memorize it, did you? No. But it's something that I could very well ask. You just simply say, the internal rate of return is the discount rate that makes the net present value zero. That's it. That's all you have to say. You don't write me an essay. Don't write me a love letter. Just tell me that. The internal rate of return is useful. So, well, now, just as a point of history, back in the old days before we had calculators, internal rate of return was important, obviously, so was net present value. But to find an internal rate of return, what you basically had to do was just keep searching back and forth until you got it to two decimal places of accuracy where the NPV was zero. So at this point, I know that it's above 1% and below 1.5%, so I'll try 1.2%, and then I'll try 1.3% to see if I can trap it there. And then I'll try this to the hundredths to trap it. That's how we used to do it. Now, there is a mighty easier way to do it. Go back to your happy calculator. You see that calculator? It's waiting for you to use it. Apps, finance, should be 8. And up comes, back on the main screen, IRR, open parenthesis. So what you do now, and I'm going to have to be a little careful, it might require an estimate. I don't think it does. You should be able to just key in negative 1200, comma, open the braces, 200, comma, 200, comma, 200, comma, 200, comma, 300, comma, 150, close the braces, close the parenthesis, and, well, spank me Mohammed. 1.17% is the internal rate of return. And let me tell you, even to this day, when I see it do that fast, think about the hours we used to spend trapping those internal rates of return with iterative back and forth. But there you go. Your internal rate of return is 1.17%. So in other words, if anyone gave you, for this cash flow, a discount rate to use below 1.17%, you say accept. Any discount rate above 1.17%, you would reject, because that internal rate of return is the crossing point from positive NPV, accept, to negative NPV, reject. That's about as easy as it gets. And this is our framework for capital budgeting. Here's the deal. If it's either one of these, one thing that you'll hear in some businesses, not in all businesses, they'll use the term hurdle rate. Hurdle rate, well, our hurdle rate for new projects is. What that generally means is that you would look for the internal rate of return for the project. Okay? So, for example, if someone set a hurdle rate, like, okay, and I'm going to just hack out 1%, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Someone hits me and says, well, our hurdle rate for new projects is 6%, right there, 6%. That's our hurdle rate. Okay, I come in with a project that has an internal rate of return of, let's say, project A. Well, what the hell was that? Was that Tinkerbell coming in the room? The internal rate of return for projects. And I'm going to do project A, project B, project C. Respectively, 6%, 4%. So the IRRs of my projects are 8%, that's A, 6% for B, and 4% for C. What project would you definitely not accept? A. A's profile, NPV profile, looks like that. Its internal rate of return is 8%. So if I discounted that thing at 6%, it'd have a positive NPV. You see that? So if you say 6%, okay. Well, this guy, he's good, clear out to 8%. So A's yes, C's no. What about B? What about B? It's right on the hurdle rate. Do I take it or not take it? Here's the decision criterion. At zero, you say yeah. That's just the way it's done. You just say yeah. If you hit that one right on the ass, yeah, that's just, yeah, go with it. Technically, it's meh. But, you know, in this day and age, even meh is more than we should be grateful for. There you go. That's internal rate of return, net present value. So which one would you use for capital budgeting? Here's one problem with the internal rate of return / hurdle rate approach to project acceptance, to capital budgeting decision making. And the reason we call this capital budgeting is because, remember early in the course I told you capital was long term. So when we're talking about capital budgeting here, we're talking about money that we're spending now that's going to have long term implications on the company. Long term, we hope, cash inflows to the company. So that's why we call it capital budgeting. Okay, now, first problem with using this internal rate of return with a hurdle rate concept is that where is this hurdle rate coming from? That's something I've asked it, and we've had discussions. I've been in company meetings where they declare the hurdle rate, and someone says, why do we use that hurdle rate? I've heard that hurdle rate every year for the last 5 years I've worked here. Where did that come from? And quite typically, you have this sort of like,
Well, that's kind of the way we always did it. I think Moses told, was it Moses who told us that? Yeah, about 5,000 years ago. It's something like that. It's kind of like it came out of the ass or a burning bush or something like that. That idea that we can just declare a hurdle rate, we're never going to accept anything that is worse than this, that's not a very good way to make your project decisions. But there's something a little deeper about internal rates of return. Here's the thing. Internal rates of return have a mathematical quirk in them. Internal rates of return behave according to this nice, sweet profile you're seeing here. They hit the axis like that once, and that's your IRR, NPV positive to NPV negative. It goes like that. If you remember from your dark days of arithmetic or algebra, we call where a function hits the x-axis the root of the function, the zero of the function. You remember those times in your happy past when you did parabolas, or parabolas if you're Italian, and you had the roots of the function like that? Yeah, that's basically what we're doing here, is we're finding the root of an NPV. We're finding, essentially, just numerically estimating a root of a function. Here's the problem with an NPV. With an internal rate of return. An internal rate of return has one root, which we hope it does, but it doesn't have that all the time. If the cash flow switches sign more than once, then the internal rate of return will have 2, 3, 4 roots. It'll just go up and down. And the calculator would tell you whichever one it started looking for first. So if you had, see, this cash flow switches sign from negative to positive, switches once. I will have one clean, clear, visual NPV, internal rate of return. But if the cash flow switched sign, where somewhere along the way we had to throw a bunch of money into the project again to get it back up to speed, and then it started pumping more money to us again, the internal rate of return would have absolutely no meaning, because essentially what would happen is IRR would switch back and forth and back and forth. So wherever your calculator started looking, if it started looking there, it'd probably find that one. If your calculator started looking there, it'd probably find that one. It would have no meaning. Essentially, you would have what we call spurious results. That's a problem, because in the real world, cash flow does switch signs on some projects. You'll have a project where you will put money into it to pump it. And then later on, you have to put in another pile of money to pump it up even further, or to keep it going past a certain time. And if you think about it, a lot of times in companies, there are these place times when the company just sort of more or less has to say, oh God, we're going to have to spend so much money. But what comes out of that money is going to be great. Have any of you been in recent times to Target? Or if you're fancy, Target? Have you seen what they've done with those stores? They've got them, they look like, you know, they got food aisles, lots of food aisles. It's upscale. You know, they actually look at me funny when I go in there now. Are you supposed to be here? Well, yes, I'm buying stuff. But it's actually nice looking. They've really expanded stores. They put in groceries. They even have these meats that are like delicious noms in there now. And so that took a hellacious amount of money. And then they're probably going to have to do more down the road, because now they got such a significantly different operation, they're going to have to severely upgrade inventory control, lots of different things that could be extraordinarily expensive additional phases to this new age of Target. That's the thing I was talking about. These projects where you put money in, you start getting money back from it, incremental, marginal cash flow from it, extra cash flow because you did this. Then down the road, you're going to have to throw more money into it, negative cash flow again, and then from that, you hope you will get positive cash flow from the next round of the upgrade.
So in the real world, the internal rate of return becomes something at the beginning of the project where you know you're going to have to do these phases of big negative expenditures. There you go. You're not going to be able to do an IRR because the IRR will give you spurious results. NPV is the way you do it. Now, first things first. Normally, you're going to be given a set of projects, and almost all of you will be involved in this sooner than you think. You'll be involved in projects. Okay, we got this slate of projects. First in your lives, you may be in a project that's already been a go, and you're dealing with that. Later on, you'll come to a level where you'll be in the decision-making process for projects, whether they are go or no go. That's where you begin to see this kind of thing come in. Okay, we do a whole slate. We got our projects, the costs of them, the cash flow coming back. We figure out the NPVs of the projects. All of the projects that have positive NPVs, we say yes. All of the projects that have negative NPVs, we say no. It's as simple as that until it's not as simple as that. There's one last thing. It's not really a mathematical thing, but it has mathematical implications. What happens if you have mutually exclusive projects? Now, the rule is always take projects that are positive NPV. Always take them. What happens if you have two projects that can't both be done at the same time? One would preclude the other. They might have to use the same land, or they might have to use the same equipment. Or they might hit the same market. And then you'd be trying to, you'd end up ruining both products because they'd be competing against each other in a way you didn't want them to. Sometimes it's okay if you make products that compete with each other and make consumers think they have choice when they don't. But sometimes you have to decide, well, we got one way we could do this, or we got a completely different project. Which one do we go with if we can't do both at the same time? In a situation like that, where there's mutual exclusivity, notwithstanding the book gets into some more nuance, some more complexity with it, but realistically, you take the one with the higher NPV. It's almost like, duh, obviously, the one with the higher NPV, if the projects are mutually exclusive. There are a couple of really weird times. I can show you examples. I think the book even shows you an example. Where you could have two projects are mutually exclusive. You have A and B. And let me write this. NPV, IRR, A, B. NPV for the first project is 1.28 million. NPV for the second project is 1.56 million. These are mutually exclusive projects. The internal rate of return on project A is 12.55%. The IRR on project B is 10.21%. Well, there's what we technically call in the business a pisser. You've got two mutually exclusive projects. NPV on B is better than NPV on A, but IRR on A is better than NPV on B. As they used to say in the Wonder Bread commercials, what's a mother to do? Well, you go with the NPV. You go with the NPV. That's just all you do. And I'll tell you right now, if you are in finance or if you ever intersect with finance, there will be companies where you will have the boss say, we go with IRR. We go with IRR. And it's just like, I mean, if that's what they say and he's writing, he's signing your paycheck, you say, yes, evil master. But, I mean, the technically correct thing to do would be to take the NPV on it. But it can happen. Mutually exclusive projects where the NPVs and the IRRs give you exactly opposite decision-making directions. In a theoretical course or in a course where we're teaching you what you should do, you go with the NPV, whichever one is higher. In the real world, that will be mostly what happens, but I know for a fact, and I had one of my former students tell me, If they're mutually exclusive, we decide, we take the IRR because of our hurdle rate thing. See, they would might even set, let's say, the hurdle rate. We're setting our hurdle rate at thus and so. Well, you might have the hurdle, that if it's a hurdle rate, you're not going to convince them to get off the hurdle rate bandwagon. So there you go. They're going to take the IRR approach. The theoretical way to do it would be to take NPV, because it just purely telescopes your cash flows back to the present. That's all I have for you. Go home.